It seems a long time ago since I was asked if I would come today, and I'm sorry, but I'm coming back like that bad penny, really, in October. It's a great joy to be with you. Whenever I come to this church, there is always a greeting, a very good welcoming from everyone. And the church feels very alive. You know, when I arrived this morning, there was somebody digging the garden, and all sorts of tasks were going on. And if we look at your entrance hall and your letters, your newsletters, they're full of the good things that you do. So it gives me great pleasure to come and be with you. One of the things that you do as a church, and that's, I think, Gareth will probably tell me in a minute, but I think across the churches in Norwich, workplace chaplaincy is supported by you folk, and we're very grateful for that. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about my role as a chaplain, but that will come in a moment. We heard the lovely story that we all know so well of the lost sheep. I've heard it many times, and I've always thought of that sheep as perhaps a young sheep separated from its mother, a rather dreamy sheep who just loses track of where he is or her she is, or an older sheep who can't keep up. Until this time when I read it, and I thought, the thought popped into my head about this sheep, probably called Tom, who was a sparky young sheep, one who didn't listen or think of consequences. So it was easy for him to wander off or escape. Have we got another Tom? Oh dear. Sorry, Tom. This is another Tom, not you. We have no idea, of course, what sort of animal Jesus had in mind, but being lost and found is a powerful picture of the gospel message that Jesus comes to deliver. Hope, acceptance, and above all, love for all, including those on the margins, those who are judged sinners or outcasts like tax collectors. All those people like Paul who made huge mistakes. And it's a great, extravagant love that seeks us out and brings us home. So as I say, I'm one of my roles, and I have many hats, sadly, in some ways, but I'm chaplain for the coroner in Norfolk. And over the past 10 years, I've been in court as inquests have been held into the deaths that are sudden or unexpected. And lost, being lost, is a word that is significant in many ways. Thankfully, inquests are not a common occurrence for most people. But because of that, many feel lost in a place that puts them in a strange, formal, legal process. The inquest is held in a court, and as much as we want to make it as informal and as friendly as we can, it is a court. And court is a word that conjures up judgment. And it's particularly difficult for people of different nationalities and cultures where courts are places of fear and punishment. The hearings have a particular process and a language that's unfamiliar. And imagine trying to make sense through an interpreter of all this when English is not your first language. So lots of things that people approach a court feeling very lost about. They're out of their normal comfort zone. They're experiencing things that they've never experienced before. Witnesses who come give evidence alone. And as much as we say it's not a court of blame or responsibility, they are under scrutiny. They have to answer questions. And it's not the easiest thing to manage when you're standing or sitting alone, surrounded by people in the court. And families and friends come with highly charged emotions, many of those big emotions that come with a bereavement: guilt, anger, blame. And on top of that, there are many families that are fractured, who struggle to communicate or have to be kept apart. And that sounds really hard for us to understand. But there are families who just can't sit in the same room together, or they'd be arguing or shouting. It's really difficult. They're often lost in past grievances and hurts, and that comes with all the other emotions to court. And of course, all families come grieving for someone they love. Grief leaves them very often lost in a kind of wilderness where nothing makes sense and the usual markers in life have disappeared from view. And we don't underestimate the impact for professional witnesses either. They come often lost in a different way. The self-scrutiny they put themselves under, reflecting on their actions and protocol, takes them on an unfamiliar journey that is hugely disorientating. They question all that they did. They question what they might have done, what they missed. And if you think of a police officer or a fire officer being first on the scene at a death, then for them there is an extra poignancy, an extra sense that they bring of what is life all about. As chaplain, I'm part of the support for all who come to court, and that means everyone from the cameraman who stands out in the snow, very often very reluctant to take pictures of families, through young reporters who come to listen to things that they probably haven't experienced before, and through all those witnesses, families, friends, and of course the staff and volunteers in the court who are human as well. They come and listen to things that are quite painful very often. It's a challenge to enter the snapshot of each story revealed under the scrutiny of an inquest. Being available for people of all faiths and none is vital so that no one is excluded. And I've had profound conversations about forgiveness with a Muslim father. I helped build trust with a lady who said, "You won't want to speak to me, I'm a pagan." And it turned out she was nothing of the sort. I think she'd got some very mixed ideas of what a pagan was. And she's ended up going to the cathedral for evensong because she loves the choral music and she remembers from her childhood being in a church. There are many conversations that begin with, "Well, okay, but I'm not religious, you know." And I have to reassure them that that's fine. We're just there to be alongside. As a chaplain, I'm not limited by time and can spend as long as necessary to listen as people express their fears, their concerns, and they tell their stories. You know, if you've been with someone who's got a really difficult story, they want to say it, but sometimes can't. Or if they do say it, they want to say it over and over, and people then move away. So to have someone who's willing to spend time to listen is really important. It's a huge privilege, and it's often deeply moving to hear these stories of what's happened, full of wisdom, regret, hope, and expectations. I've learnt much about courage and resilience, how people carry on being there, about dignity, when all they want to do is scream in agitation at somebody they don't understand or believe, when they're in court. But they hold on. They have dignity. They show grace in allowing people to say what they think happened and to accept that. And of course, there's a huge amount of love. Love for the person who's died and love for those around them. The chaplain provides a safe place to express strong emotions, vulnerability, and it's a place where big questions can be asked. At the end of a very long inquest of a week, we were due to come back the following week, and on Friday night, when everyone was very tired, a lady who'd lost her father and didn't agree with the do not resuscitate order in hospital came and stood in front of me very close and said, "So, what does God think about do not resuscitate orders?" We talked for a little while, and the next day I got a bunch of flowers, so I obviously didn't get it too wrong. But it's allowing those questions to be asked, and I have the time and the willingness to listen. That safe place is more than just holding a space where people can sit and be quiet or vent their feelings. It was, in one inquest, actually very much more than that. As an inquest was adjourned, a young lady came from a group of friends and family that had been at the inquest and said, "Excuse me, but I'm a Christian. Can I talk to you?" And I said, "Yes, of course." And she said, "Well, the brother of the person who's died is very angry with the young girl who's giving evidence." She said, "And I know that he's got a gun at home, and I'm worried." So I was able to say, "Okay, we'll look after that." So the inquest was moved to the magistrate's court, where, of course, we had security and alarms to say if there was anything untoward coming in. We had security people around, and we were able to whisk the young lady in question in and out of court as soon as she'd given her evidence. So it was literally supplying a safe place. Holding anguish, questions, laughter, tears, and often people. I'm very fortunate that I'm old enough and of the right gender to say, "I can give you a mum hug." And very often it's ladies who I give the mum hug to, but sometimes partners will say, "And what about me?" So it's literally holding all the things that come, and sometimes the people in their great need. And it's that sometimes silent, sometimes voiced offering of God's love that gives comfort and a sense of direction in the darkness that's being lost. And it's about giving hope for the next steps on their journey. I will never know, for most of them, whether they find peace, wholeness, healing. But in that place of lostness at an inquest, we can just offer that hope of healing and comfort for them to move forward. And I guess each one of us will have known those similar moments in our lives when we've felt lost or abandoned and we don't know where to go. And that's the moment when, as I told the children, God holds us tight. He never gives up. He never lets us go. That love is there always for everyone, whoever we are, wherever we go. And he searches us out. I think we underestimate God's powerful love. It's extravagant. It's given to tax collectors, to sinners, to outcasts, to anyone who puts out their hand and says, I'm here, I need you. But he's there also for the ones who run away or hide or are too lost. He goes to search them out. He searches them out in a love that was given in his son, Jesus, given on a cross. And that love we can never, ever be separated from. Amen.